Welcome to Artifacts. I'm your host, Marissa Dickens, and today's guest is animator, director, and producer, Howie Parkins.
Hello. Hello. Hi, Marissa.
Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss an opportunity like this. I have so much to share.
I'm so ready.
it's interesting stuff. You know, I've got stories. All good. All clean.
I've got questions. So, well, Howie and I actually met at my restaurant that I work at. We have to give a shout out to Centani in California, because you are a regular there. And we were talking, and I'm like, what do you do? And you're like, oh, I'm in animation. And I'm like, excuse me, I did not know this. And we're like in the hub of just media and film and animation. So I'm like, wait, I need to know more. I need to learn more about your journey.
Yeah, I am a regular and a proud card-carrying member, but also, like, you're right, we are literally in the center, the mecca, the beginning of it all, literally. Actually, that's probably Silver Lake, but anyways, that was back when Walt was doing Steamboat Willie. But anyway, he moved over to this side of the hill, and it's just been animation central.
You've done a lot of things. I'm just gonna highlight a couple. So you directed and work on shows like The Lion Guard, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Recess, and like my personal favorite when I was growing up, The Emperor's New School, which is like
such a little niche thing. Yep.
How does it feel to have such like, to look back on all your work and be like, man, I did that. I did all those shows.
Well, it's funny because I don't really look back on it. Where the joy comes from is when I meet the fan base like yourself. Mm-hmm. And my last crew or the last production I was on at Disney TV was a show called Haley's On It. And most of my crew were, I'd say, average age, mid to late 20s. And they all got into animation because of things like Rocko's Modern Life, Recess, Emperor's New School, you know, and that just put a smile on my face because I was them once, you know, watching the classics, Bugs Bunny, Roadrunner Hour, Popeye, to anything Tex Avery animated on. So I felt like at peace, like my generation, we've done our part and now it's time to step aside and let the youngsters go and take it to another level. You know what I mean?
I think too, because like childhood is such a precious time, and to have, you know, animated shows like that to leave such an impact and an imprint on you. And then now when you get older, like in your 20s or 30s, those shows are nostalgia. How cool you get people who come up to you.
Yeah. And you know, usually it's around the age I think I know where this is going. Yeah. You're a Recess fan. Let me guess, your favorite character, Spinelli. And they're like, yes. And I was every Halloween and I was Spinelli. So it's awesome. And, you know, like you said, Emperor's New School, that probably Emperor's New Groove is one of my all time favorite animated films. So when I got tapped to come over and work on that series, I was all in because I was just so excited to study. We studied the film for timing and expressions and sort of staging, camera moves. So that was our Bible. You know, that's what we were committed. The cool thing was everybody but David Spade, he wasn't available, but we got everybody else. Like,
nice.
So we worked with Eartha Kitt. We had John Goodman. He was out in New Orleans, so we literally had to sort of patch him in. He was in a room somewhere halfway across the States, but it all worked, you know. Yeah, I'm glad you were a fan of that.
Yes. I want to touch on your beginning. So where did you grow up and what was your first or earliest exposures to animation?
Well, I was born in the UK. I was born south of Liverpool. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
And apparently, according to my sister and my mom and dad, I was drawing at a very early age. Apparently, one of my first drawings, apparently it was a good one, but unfortunately, it was on the wall in the hallway. So my mom said she didn't know what to do. Let's get him some paper. But I was watching a lot of the British television. I wouldn't say anything animated, but there was a lot of sort of fun that got me inspired about character and story and voices. So there was definitely something starts clicking. Then we emigrated to Canada, just outside of Toronto. And of course, I'd never seen anything like, we discovered immediately Saturday mornings, the whole ritual of get up in the morning, pajamas, bowls of cereal. Parents are still sleeping. We ate the whole thing. And I just discovered all of it. And of course, back in those days, we couldn't stop, freeze frame, and sketch my favorite
Oh,
character.
yeah.
I had to just pay attention and quickly, like, try to get Bugs to look like Bugs Bunny. And, I'd pore over it and try, but I was always drawing. Art classes came, that's where I was probably most comfortable and really feeling in my wheelhouse. I had great instructors through high school, and then it came time to, pick a college, and I wanted to go into graphic design. I didn't know anything about that you could do animation for a living at that time. So I started out at a place in Oakville, Ontario, called Sheridan College. Wonderful school, very well respected, all in all forms of art. I did a year of graphic design, and then it was about halfway through second year, I suddenly wasn't feeling it. It was different. But by then, I'd gotten to know a couple of people in the animation program. And I'll never forget, I was upstairs at 2 in the morning trying to design a toothpaste package, and they all it, it and it it was just everything I did was just lame, right? So I went downstairs to make some coffee because it was going to be a long night. I wasn't even close to having something. And my roommate was doing the same. So I went up to his room to have my coffee, and he showed me what he was doing in second year animation. And it was like a huge light bulb went off, and it was beautifully done. It was a assignment where you have Goofy walk across the stage with 2 buckets of water. He puts them down and splashes and turns around. Anyway, I went to my room, turned the light off, and went to bed. And next morning, I went to the dean and I pulled out of graphic design and came back the following new year and started the animation program.
Wow, okay, that's so fascinating. Because your gut's just like telling you, like, this isn't fun. Like, this graphic design is kind of like it's boring.
I was struggling where, and that became, the check engine light came on, and I thought, okay, this there, I just wasn't into it. But boy, from the first day of animation, which was a 3-year program,
Okay.
just all in. And it just felt like I'm home, like here I am.
What kind of classes would you take in school then? 'Cause I know nothing about animation. So like what are some of the or like the highlights for you when
Yeah.
you're in
Well,
school?
that's a no, great question. Obviously, we were animating by hand. We had to, we're still doing pencil and paper. So we had to learn how they did it, how you start with a key drawing, and then that's your A1 drawing, and then you put another sheet of paper and you move the character, and that's your A2 drawing. And then you gotta, it maybe it's just a step forward. Then you gotta figure out where's my in-betweens gonna go. So first of all, you gotta get a pose, you pose. So now you can sort of see the character moving across. If he's doing a sneak, you got to get the body language just right. So then you get that done, and then you go in and you start doing breakdowns. So maybe you've got 10 poses, but you got to in between them now to get the timing right. So we would have a light
I'm
bulb.
consuming.
This, oh yeah, there's so many people would say, "What are how that just looks." How are you able to sit and focus for all those hours? And then, you'd take a break, and then we had this technique of rolling the drawing so we could sort of see. And that would be the spark we needed. The moment you see it working, you're ready to go another, do some more in-betweening. And then, of course, then you'd put it in for back in school, we would go to the camera room and shoot our pencil test. And then we'd have to wait till the next morning to get the 16-millimeter film back. And then you ran it through the moviola or on the flatbed, and then you could see, okay, you could see where things weren't working, but it was enough that, oh my God. And if other students came by and were like, oh my God, that looks so good. So in first year, we learned different animation basic stuff, like wave cycles, like waving flag, bouncing ball. So we'd get, introduced to stretch and squash, which, you watch any animated film, that's how they were able to show the weight of a character. So it was all the basics in first year. Then we had to do a walk cycle for human, and then a walk cycle for a funny character, give him a funny walk. And then animals, we had to pick an animal. And anyway, yeah, so we had to study film and watch how like an animal would move.
It's like a lot of movement-driven things that you have to look out for when you're watching and creating. So you said you first worked on Care Bears, but then how did you end up in LA?
It wasn't right away a desire of mine. Like I stayed in Toronto for a bit. So Care Bears, we did that. Then we did a series called Ewoks and Droids. That was with a studio down here in LA. So we were in, kind of cahoots and working inside, but there was still no desire. After that wrapped, I went over to London because I heard they had a really interesting community of animation studios in the West End of London, right down in Soho, Piccadilly Circus. And so, and of course, I had my British passport, so I went over to work in England for about four months, and then I traveled around a bit, came back to Toronto, got on something else, a Teddy Ruxpin, I think it was, in that time. And then a friend of mine was over in London again saying, hey, there's a film being done right now called Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And it's a Disney picture, me and combined with Warner Brothers, and they're hiring. What are you doing right now? And I was like, I just finished up. And so I was on a plane, like, I think 4 days later, I'm off to London. But I didn't even talk to the studio. I just figured I'll go back to London, sleep on a guy's couch, and we'll go from there. And then sure enough, my girlfriend at the time came with and we both got jobs. Oh, and the cool thing was, I didn't even go to the studio. Well, first I went to the pub, and that's where I met the right people. And
Oh,
then
wow.
they said, okay, we'll come in tomorrow morning and you can do an in-betweening test. So we wrapped in April of 88 in London, and I was ready to get back. It's been about 6 months that I've been over there. And so I lined up a job at Nelvana, which was the big studio in Toronto, and I was all excited, to come back to Toronto. And I think I was starting a week or so later. I get home and the project gets canned. So, and in our industry, we're kind of used to that. Like at that time, it was like, oh, okay. And there wasn't a whole lot going on. So that summer, I became a bike messenger. So I was like, yeah, I can ride a bike. I know the city. So I spent that whole summer just riding around, dropping off packages. And then I got a phone call from a friend, and he goes, hey, I'm in Munich right now and working on a film, and they're hiring. Would you be interested? So now, sure enough, a month later, so now we're in contact with the studio, and it's a German film, German produced. And because I worked on Roger Rabbit, anybody who worked on Roger Rabbit, they're trying to, pull in or, hire on the spot. So that we had that going for us. So we were on a plane probably 3 weeks later, and I flew to Munich and ended up staying there for about a year and a half. There was one morning where my mom called and said, hey, what's going on over there? The Berlin Wall just opened up. And I was like, no way. So I go to work, and nobody's working. We're all standing around the TVs watching all the live footage. And I'm thinking, what are we doing here? So I got me, my girlfriend, two other Canadian guys, and a French couple were like, that night we got a train to Berlin and just walked around Berlin and, gave chocolates to all these Germans coming across for the very first time.
Wow.
Cool. Like, we knew this was massive, like huge moment in our lifetime. And the film, it's Werner. It was based on an underground comic book called Werner.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
and it was great and to animate on it. I was very fortunate. I got to animate on a lot of the opening title stuff. And so, yeah, it was great. So then that wraps up. I believe it was around August of 1990, and we called a friend here in Burbank, and he was, on the answered the phone, and he was in the pool. It was like Saturday afternoon, beautiful day in LA, and we're catching up, and then he happened to mention to my girlfriend, "Hey, what are you doing? You should come and visit. I could use you on a project called the Fern Gully Last Rainforest, right?" So, because we were really trying to figure out where do we go next. Like, we're done with, and maybe it's time to go back to Toronto. So then we calling those guys in Burbank was like a big, like that was huge. Because yeah, so we quickly flew home to Toronto, and then 3 weeks later we came down to visit, and my girlfriend went for an interview with the producers of the Fern Gully project, and like half an hour later she comes back in going, "Well, I got the job. I guess we're moving to LA."
And
So,
how long have you been in LA since?
well, we moved September 1990.
Okay.
And
What a crazy journey. It sounds
then,
like the running theme is you gotta know someone, or you do the work, and then someone's like, "Hey, we need someone else. Let's call Howie." Okay. And
no,
Howie's
that's,
like, "I'll move to Berlin. I'll go to Munich. Why not? I'll go
yeah,
back. Why not?"
then the Canadians kind of had the reputation of just like having a backpack, like ready to go, because we were always, I think the first, after I got 6 years out of college, I moved around quite a bit wherever
That's
the world.
experience too, not only to travel, but you're meeting people, doing different projects, which only builds your repertoire and your
Yeah.
network.
Yeah. No, I learned a ton from animators from Amsterdam, from Paris. And then when I moved to LA, I was ready. I felt fully ready to just take it on. And on Simpsons, they hired me on as a character layout. Then they found out I was an animator, so they asked me to do some the animation timing as well. And I could do it, like absolutely. And
Wow.
that with season two, so I was just like, "What do you need me to do this week?" "Oh, go help Jim Reardon do timing." "Oh, what do you want?" "Rich Moore needs layout help." And then starting a third season, they tapped me as a assistant director because they could see that I had, you know.
Well, how's that transition like? Was it an easy transition to go
Yeah.
from
Yeah.
director?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
What?
Well,
Because you
that
have to work with so many people then as an assistant director.
yeah. Oh, it was, and you know, like I studied what the director wanted, but I also supported him. You know, I knew that I was him, I was his support. And I wanted to pull the layout crew, you know, pull the talents out of them and work with them, giving them notes and explaining why this would work better. You know, and I, and to me, it was just the next level of, you know, my career. Then when I got lured away to go to Disney, I was doing animation timing on a little short series called Nightmare Ned that most people don't know about. And anyway, one day I get a knock on the door, and my two producer friends come in and they go, "Hey, we just got our show. It's they gave it a green light. We're gonna, you know, this little show called Recess, and we want you to be the director."
And you're like, what?
Well, I was like, I'm flattered, and hey, but myself personally, I just, there was a couple of things I still needed to, you know, acquire, or just I wasn't there yet, and I didn't feel comfortable, so I did, I said no, and they were like, "What?" "No, I'm not ready yet." So, and they were like, "Well, what do you," and I said, "Well, you know, because I really want to master storyboarding, and how can I give a storyboard artist notes on storyboarding if I have not storyboarded on the series?"
Interesting, yeah.
So they gave me that opportunity later. Then I think it was halfway through season two, they got the Recess Schools Out movie up and running, and they got greenlit to do that. So they took the series director to the movie, and then they came to me and they said, "We'll ask you one more time. Do you want to direct this show?" And I was like, "Absolutely. I am so ready."
So
Because
you came on season three.
Midway through season two, as a director of Recess, yeah.
And how many seasons do they end up having for that show?
Back in those days, we would do 65 half hours. That was so,
Okay.
that would get you to what they would call the syndication, like number, and then they could now hand it over to a smaller network or localized network. Maybe you've got a Channel 13 in Ohio, and they could now show these after school.
What does a typical day then look like for you as a director of an animated television series?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the week was pretty action-packed, and depending if we were just doing pre-production, that would entail, usually going to a table read, like, because we really wanted to keep an eye on the script so the writers didn't like get too fantastical with something like, okay, you want a whole stadium of people to exit out one door. You know what I mean? Like, we had to rein them in and say, that's funny, but could you stage it like this? Show the stadium, but then, and then I might have to go to a board handout after that, and we pitch the script to the two board artists that are going to do it. Then there's a design meeting. So now we got to go look at the designs that we handed out the week before, and we'll give notes. And the cool thing about Haley's on it was we wanted the show takes place in Oceanside, California. So we wanted to make it very grounded and make the layouts, the perspective, the atmosphere, the locations had to feel real, but cartoony. And, we stylized it. And then I might have to go down to editing because now one of the storyboards is done. We're now watching the show, what we call an animatic, which we get the timing of the scenes. We get to see what gags are working. There might be something I've got notes on poses. And then once, that might be just maybe that's the Monday, Tuesday. It could be a little bit of everything. Now we've got backgrounds to look at. We've got a color meeting. So now we're going to look at the characters, the props that have been designed. The backgrounds are now done, but now they got to go off to paint. So it's just a lot of spinning plates, I
So
guess.
cool to have your hand in everything and to
Oh,
see
yeah.
part of development, because you have
Yes.
to want to be able to communicate to all different types of artists and people and understand kind of a little bit of what they're doing while also making the show cohesive and in tune with the style and the vibe and the message and the whole
Yeah.
vibe of the show.
And
Respect, Howie, respect.
it was really something. And again, I honed my skills over the early part of my career. And because, part of my job was to not just say that's wrong, that's not working, and walk away. I had to say, well, what I'm thinking is, what if Scott came in and then, oh yeah, I see. So you got to have the answer, and it better be a funny one. You know what I mean? I like Chuck Jones said, my job on Haley's On It was to crack up the writers. Like, I wanted to put things in there that they didn't have in the script, but took the joke or the gag visually to
Level.
kind of thing. And I wanted to bring the board artists into that world as well. Like, yeah, that you did what was scripted, but how about think about, how could we make this funnier? And we'd get talking, pitch some ideas. And I'm like, there you go. That's the one. That's it. Do that. Once we moved into post-production, now the episode's back in color and we're now watching it. Now I'm going to be editing with sitting in the editor bay with my lead editor, and we're going to go in and clip frames, tighten things up, maybe do some trickery with the camera, maybe and it was never ending, and you just always looking to make it better, funnier, more entertaining. And it was so rewarding. And then, it keeps going. Then I would sometimes go to the music meetings, but the producers, they'd sit with the composers and pick ideas for what they're thinking for a score or what source. But I would go to the sound effects meetings and we just watch the color with, and we might say, yeah, it's a bit too cartoony, or that's, something, you got a really good sound of a, and they were here in Burbank too. They're just down the street on Victory. So
Would you go into as well with voice acting, or is that not really, do you have any say in that?
yeah, back before COVID, that was pretty, for me, I would like to go and listen to voice recordings, and it was just wonderful to watch them come in and do their craft. And I was really just enjoying it. I might have a suggestion or lean over and tell the voice director, hey, could you get one just with a little more of a smile at the end? And but once COVID hit, we did it all like this. We just did it on Zoom. So but I was so busy with the series that it was more the writers and the producers that would run the voice recordings. I sat in on a couple of table reads for Lion Guard, and then I get a knock on my door and they're like, hey, the writers thought you were pretty funny as the voice of Mbear. Do you want to do the voice? And I was like,
You
Not in SAG. And I was just, I can't even remember what I did. And they said, oh, we recorded it. We'll play it for you. So I was in Lion Guard. I got to play a character. I think he's an old rhino or something. I don't, or a hippo. I can't remember. See?
Lion Guard is like part of Lion King. So for you, as like working on this show, like how do you keep it in the same vein as Lion King and like emulate that while also creating something new? Did you feel extra pressure because Lion King is such a beloved classic?
Well, absolutely. And I'll never forget when I got called in with, and they said, hey, we've been given the green light to produce or do a pilot for something based on Lion King. Right away, I was like, oh boy, how are we
Like,
pulling?
wait.
So Emily, the person, point person, calls me in, and first thing she showed me was a CG test of the character. And I pretty well headed for the exit. Like I was like, no way, we no way. I said, to be honest with you, I don't want any part of it if you're gonna do this, and she goes, well, hold on, hang on. And she did it on purpose. Then she goes, let me share this test we did with a studio up in Ottawa, Canada. And I knew of them because I was working with them on Jake and the Neverland Pirates, and I loved work. Their animators were just incredible. And they were doing it in Harmony, which sort of can look hand-drawn. And that was the beauty of it. Still looked like a 2D cartoon, not anime or CG. So she shows me a 20-second animation test that they did, and I had to watch it again and again. I was like, if we can get even close to that, then I'm in. Like, and so we all agreed when we got the green light, we can't make The Lion King, but let's study it, let's watch it, let's figure out. Like, that was our art director, basically. We just had the film. We had an art director, but we anything we needed, we just researched the film or that clip. And the studio in Canada was all on board. They were the same. Like, the animators wanted to get that level of animation so it looked feature. And it was what, as a director, it was like a perfect situation, a perfect environment to be in. Because we all wanted, we didn't want to do anything different. And we were hoping that if you were a fan of The Lion King and now your kids are watching The Lion Guard, you could sit and go, oh my God, this looks great. And no, I knew, do not change a thing. You do not want to upset the village. You know what I mean?
It's a lot of pressure because like growing up why do you think the 90s we're like a Disney Renaissance. Like we have what Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid, Lion King. Like, why do you think that era, what was so successful about that time with Disney animation?
I think story, obviously, character, music. I mean, there was just we hadn't seen anything like it because all we had was I don't even know if, like, at that time, I guess the classics were available on VHS back in the 80s and 90s, but just to have a really, like, and I mean, the animation talent, obviously the original animators that were nicknamed the Nine Old Men that were doing, Jungle Book and 101 Dalmatians. They were all retired or had passed away, but suddenly there was this new generation of talent, Glenn Keane and Mike Suri, and that had come up studying the greats and now ready to do it, to share. And so Disney captured that, and then they knew that an animated film has to have a great story and be visually just wonderful to watch. And so they just went all in. And just same thing, like what they did, what worked so well on The Jungle Book or what, Pinocchio, and just fired it right back up again. And I think the audience at that time had not seen anything like it. And it was just a breath of fresh air, something magical to go see.
There is a rumor. Is Disney going to go back to 2D?
I have a feeling that we're gonna, kind of have a renaissance or have another stage where a 2D film comes out and everybody. Well, the one that won the Oscar, I'm trying to remember the name of the film.
With the black cat?
Little Black Cat. I mean,
Not Flo. What's it called?
yes, that's
Is
it.
Flo?
Yeah.
Is
Yeah.
Flo? Okay.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, well done. I should have done my homework. Anyway, It's, I just feel a movie going audience, you get sort of burnt out. It's like going into a candy store. You eat all the candy and then you want something else. So, I feel it's going to possibly be in demand maybe, in the next 5 years.
I want to talk about animation now today because we kind of touched on this at when we were out at work. I'm like, why is it like what? Because I have a friend too who is in animation. He's like, it's just not to say dying, but it's just like it's just obviously different. What is it, especially in this industry in LA? Because we talked about it a little bit, but what why is it?
Yeah, well, it's mostly what we've figured out is the traditional way and the traditional audiences that we would, produce this content for. Our magic age group was 6 to 11. And back up until probably just 4 or 5 years ago, Disney Channel was it, or Nickelodeon. You watch Cartoon Network, you watch, you could find it all. You made a date Friday night, my son.
Yep.
Make dinner and TV, and turn on and just watch Cartoon Network or. But now with platform and streaming and how kids get their content, they've just disappeared. Nobody watches Disney Channel. Very, very few, because now they got their phones, they got the laptops, and they can dial it up anytime. There's no specific, you got to be home at 6:30 on Friday night.
Yeah.
So it really changed up. How do we do this? Like, how do you, and there's so much content. Like, how do you,
It's really over. It's like oversaturated, really overwhelming. Because like, what do you sit and watch?
yeah, exactly. So some of the studios are really like, they're scratching their heads trying to figure out how do we come up with that lightning strike and how do we hit that audience and get the numbers. And then it might be just a 3 months later, they're gone. They've discovered something else. So it's just really different than what when I was in the industry, where there was only, two ways you could see these things: at the movie theater or on your TV set. I mean, 2008 was when YouTube came around, and back then,
Oh yeah, YouTube's such a
but no animation was on that. There was all sorts of rights and rules, and you couldn't put it in, post anything. So it's changed, because I think we all want to animate and tell stories. But our audience has completely evolved into, a different sort of in a world that we're just not understanding right now. And how do we crack the code? How do we become? I mean, unless you're something like South Park, Simpsons, I think they're bringing back Phineas and Ferb. It seems safe, like, just to bring back, reboot something. But I guess, but you
There's a
know,
lack of newness and unique
exactly.
stories.
Yeah, it's really disheartening, and I usually just do things of my own at home and keep my creative stuff going. I'm
Yeah.
doing a lot of paintings, and then someone told me about a life drawing class that's here in the valley that I might try to get out to, and just keep my skills going.
Yeah.
It's really
What a
exciting.
rewarding experience and career. Ah, so cool.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, I want to ask you some rapid fire questions.
Sure.
Favorite Saturday morning cartoon?
Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Okay.
Yes. Or and Sherman and Peabody. Yeah, there was something, and again, very limited animation, but the voices and the stories were just so fun.
LA's best kept secret.
As far as like animation goes, well, like I said,
Anything, honestly. Restaurant,
that's
place, park, animation, theater.
Me, like, best kept secret. Well, I gotta say, probably Griffith Park for me. Just everything about that. I cycle up there, I hike, I just love just having that in our backyard. And again, like, Walt Disney was gonna, theme park was supposed to be here in Burbank in the early days.
I've heard about that.
So, because Griffith Park would have been the background, it would have just been there. But after they started planning it out, and they realized we've already run out of real estate, so they went to Anaheim. But and then the original Disney Studios were on the other side of Griffith Park in Los Feliz.
Know that.
Yeah, right now there's just a Gelson's Mall and a shop and a plaque on a light post that says the original
Oh my gosh.
Disney Studios. And I think it's on Hyperion and Griffith Park, the corner of Hyperion and Griffith Park.
Okay.
So animation's always sort of been around. And then also over in Griffith Park is Walt's. There's a Walt Disney Library over there too. That,
Oh,
yeah,
wow. Go in there, like the public can go in.
I think it's like $5 to go in, and
Oh, nice.
a lot of his like collectibles, a lot of things that he, from the studios, and he was very into trains back in those days as well. So.
I toured the studio next to me, and I had to, because I wanted to know, I live right across from the just Disney studio, so I needed to go see what was inside. And you get to tour his office, and he's got the front office and then his back office and a bunch of trains, the whole Disneyland map and all his little knickknacks, and very cool to see and witness.
The old animation building. Did they take you to Ink and Paint?
Yeah, we walked through just the hall, but I'll take it. And we did do the archive room as well.
Which is amazing. Like,
Yes.
I haven't been over there in a while, but yeah, when we worked in that building where the archive is at the French.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, don't get me started. I mean, again, I was there for when the Hap building was opening up, so they were working.
Yeah.
And then back in those days before cell phones, they would leave the studio doors open. So we'd walk down to the commissary right past them building the Black Rose for Pirates of the Caribbean. And if
Yeah.
you had people visiting, right, like you'd just walk through until someone says, hey, right?
Jason or Michael Myers?
I'm Mike Myers.
Because you're also a huge horror fan, so.
I'm back at Mystic Museum tomorrow for a couple of days. They got something going on. They won't tell me, but I think something horror related. But yeah, I totally, for Halloween, the movie when that came out, just life changing. But that's a lot of the sites are still over there in South Pasadena. Can still find things in the movie, I
And
mean,
you helped with Mystic Museum like build some of the sets and stuff for their like walkthrough. Which, if
so
you're in Burbank, check it out because
yeah, no, if you're there, we and he did top 10 all-time favorites. He did a poll over the last few months, or maybe back last few months of last year, so he kind of had an idea. But yeah, there's something for everybody in there. Classic 70s horror, 80s horror, 90s horror, like
how you have children's animation and then adult horror. I love it.
I've worked on a couple of big walkthrough haunts, and that it would take you 15 minutes to go through. We build up everything, and there would one of them down in South Pass 1 year, we had about 45 actors. We needed costumes, music.
You, Halloween in LA is like Christmas.
It is so good. We've talked about this, but
Especially in Burbank, everyone decorates their yards. It's like they have a Halloween map for everyone's front yards and decorations.
I'm already excited. So I'm curious to see what the Mystic Museum's doing tomorrow, but
If you could animate any live action film that you've seen, which one would you pick?
wow. Okay. I got to think of something. It would definitely have to be a comedy. I mean, I've used things from all sorts of live action moments. I had to do a sequence in The Simpsons where Bart's on a ride along with the police, the two inept police officers, and the bad guy, what's his name? He's holding up the Quickie Mart. So I took that sequence. I'm like, because in the script it said, "A la Bullet," the movie Bullet with Steve McQueen, which is one
Okay.
of my favorite classic car chase. I'm all in. Like, I basically got to animate as best I could, like scenes from the car chase in the live action film. I aged and kind of,
Oh my God.
so I did get to animate a live action moment in The Simpsons at season three.
See, okay, I'll look for it. Do you remember what episode number
The
it was?
episode, yeah, it's The Great Vocation, I think.
Okay.
It's where the kids find out what they're going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And Bart, it turns out he's going to be a policeman, and Lisa's going to be a homemaker. And she's mortified. She's just devastated. So anyway, but that sequence in there, that I and then same with like things from like Mad Max or The Road Warrior, I've put in like
Yes.
shots or something from, well, when I animated a episode for Recess Dodgeball City, where they find out that Gus is a really good dodgeball player. So I got that episode, and I love like spaghetti westerns, you know, good, the bad, ugly, and the script called for staging like that. So again, I watched, refreshed my memory and watched a couple of films, Fistful of Dollars, Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And as I boarded that episode, it was just flowing. It just came so natural. So I have had chances to board live action stuff.
That is so cool. Oh my God, I love those little tidbits. When you're not busy, what do you like to do for yourself?
Right now I'm building catios.
Wait, what are you building?
Yeah, they're outdoor living spaces for cats attached to your home. So,
I did not know this was a thing.
yeah, no, it is. Oh, and it's a bit, it's a, I've been in big
You're
demand.
always up to something, doing something with your hands, I feel like. What is the biggest gift your art has given back to you?
I just brings me joy, makes me very happy and content. Like I'm very step back, and I know everything I brought to the industry. It's inspired people, it's made people laugh and want to be able to draw or push themselves to draw. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, Howie, for coming on today. Woo!
Absolutely.
I love getting to learn more about you and animation. And now I'm going to go watch all these shows on Saturday with my cereal in the morning now.
Yeah, that's
Feels like
right.
I have to. For everyone listening, just check out Howie online. He's got IMDb. Check out his work on his, animation. Watch some shows. And make sure to follow Artifacts on Instagram. And yeah, that's a wrap. Thank you again.
Absolutely, and thank you so much.